northern Wisconsin to the low 40s in western Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny, look for a high around 50. The wind from the southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain after midnight. We'll see a low of 38. The wind will be out of the southwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with a chance of rain in the morning. The high, 48. The wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy early, then clearing. The low will be in the low 30s with the wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday, sunny. The high will be around 50. The wind will be out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Saturday night and New Year's Day, mostly cloudy with the low New Year's Eve in the upper 30s and the high on New Year's Day in the low 40s. Sunday night and Monday, mostly cloudy and colder with a low Sunday night in the mid-20s and the high Monday in the upper 20s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-40s to the low 50s, and most locations reported sunshine. At Rockford, 45, O'Hare, 44, at Bloomington, 46, Mattoon reported 50 degrees, and Carbondale, 52. At South Bend, it was 43, 48 at Lafayette, Indianapolis checked in with 47 degrees, Terre Haute, 49. Willard Airport reported a sunny sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 49. The dew point, 36. The relative humidity, 61%. The wind out of the southwest at 22 with gusts to 30 miles per hour. And the barometric pressure, 29.63 and falling. And at 12:39, 48 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. It's something you probably take for granted. You walk to the sink, the shower, the bathtub, turn a faucet, and instantly have access to clean, safe water. But thousands, if not millions, of people all over the world have no idea what that's like. And as Jennifer Fuller reports, some local leaders and students are working to change that.
Give me water.
Give me water, Lord.
Water from the spring.
Yeah, I'm George the Shoe Man. I turn you shoes into drinking water. My motto is, I don't want your money, I want your soul. Your shoe soul, that is.
George Hutchings collects shoes all over the country, resells them to third world countries, and uses the proceeds to buy drilling equipment so that he can create wells in Africa and other impoverished areas all over the globe. He says too many times women and children walk dangerous routes for miles to find water, many times in rivers and streams that are far from clean.
If you could see this bottle I'm holding in my hand, it looks like chocolate milk. That is the consistency of the water that they get. They take this water back to give to their children. That's all they have. If they give it to their children, they'll die of cholera, dysentery, diphtheria. If they don't give it to them, they will die of dehydration.
After working to bring medical supplies, food, and other donations to Africa for nearly a decade, Hutchings switched his focus to providing clean water. He says the empowerment and improvement from this upgrade is astounding. Southern Illinois University Vice Chancellor Peter Gatow knows all about walking for water. He grew up in a village in Kenya.
Let me say this. Growing up, the closest source of water that we had was at least 30 minutes walk away. So what you did is, whether it's early in the morning or after school, you picked a bucket and you went to fetch that water. And that water was from either a river or a stream. And you have no idea what's going on upstream, you know, what kind of pollutions are taking place.
But Gatow says he never knew what he was missing, and sometimes even misses the simple way of life he grew up with.
Village life is simple. There's no pollution. There are no schedules, complicated schedules. You know everybody.
After coming to the United States for higher education and then finding work here, Gatow helped to found Teach My Kenyan Children, a foundation aimed at improving educational opportunities in Kenyan villages. He leads trips to Kenya at least once a year, where students, community members, and others from the United States work to build classrooms, they donate books, and they share with villagers and children half a world away. SIU sophomore Cheyenne Adams is just one of the students who's made the trip. The zoology major from Normal, Illinois, says she never thought twice about getting involved.
I'm probably interested in helping Africa just because it's the place that needs the most help. It seems to me, on a broad overgeneralization, Africa needs the most help, so that's kind of why I ended up focusing my attention there.
Adams worked in Kenya nearly a year ago and says although she can't afford to go back, the trip costs nearly $4,000, she's been looking for ways ever since she came home to help. And when she happened to meet a volunteer for the Shoes for Water program, she thought that just might be the kind of thing she was looking for.
We just, you know, started talking, and I think he had a sign out that he was doing a shoe drive, and so we asked him what the shoe drive was for, and he told me he was doing a project, Shoes for Water, to get water to people in Kenya. And this was right after I'd gotten back from Kenya, and oh man, I just went to Kenya. So we started talking about that, and we got kind of involved, and then I came back to school, got the job as a sustainability coordinator, and then he asked me if I could set up a shoe drive in the student center, and it seemed to go with my job title, kind of, since it's reusing shoes and stuff. It seemed to kind of be a perfect match, actually.
So Adams set up the shoe drive, and students and community members worked to donate shoes to help with the Shoes for Water project. Hutchings says this and other drives have been phenomenally successful on several different levels.
Well, first of all, we've kept 1,800,000 pounds of shoes out of the landfill. We put them on people's feet. We bought 4 rigs totally. We've drilled about 250 wells, providing water for an estimated 200,000 people. And that all happens because people give a little soul, just giving their shoes. I think that's an incredible story.
Hutchings says his organization has drilled 20 wells in 2011, and he's heading back to Kenya shortly after the new year. Gitau is organizing another trip for students and community members in May. Adams says she'll continue to help in any way she can, both as a student and in her future life, wherever that might lead. I'm Jennifer Fuller.
Rain on me,
rain on me, oh Lord, wash my spirit clean.
You can find more information on these two projects at shoeman.org or tmkc.org. It's 12:45. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Now that American troops have pulled out of Iraq, NPR has asked its Iraqi colleagues to tell us how their lives have been affected by the war and what they think the future holds. Israel Rubai has long worked as a reporter and translator in NPR's Baghdad bureau. She submitted this short piece of fiction about a man standing before a judge, a character who she says represents the Iraqi experience.
Your Honor, I have lived in Iraq long enough to say that it was never like any other place in the world. Our history has been nothing but a long day of mourning and an endless caravan of coffins draped in flags. Unlike other mothers and fathers, we were the only nation that fed its sons to insatiable cemeteries. This was the only place where women dreamed of men dressed in khaki. I grew up to see that khaki was the only color that painted our memories, streets, and funerals. You see, we were a nation that gave birth to only soldiers and poets. Forgive me, Your Honor, but I grew up chanting anthems of blood and glory in a language that only we could understand. Have you ever survived on black bread? Did you have to feed your children poison when sanctions bit hard? I saw my neighbor do that before lying dead next to his little ones. Did you see armies hunted like turkeys or look in the eyes of soldiers who traded rifles for a loaf? Did you watch your leader smoke his own men in long Cuban cigars? Your Honor, when I took the first glimpse of U.S. tanks rolling across our bridge, I cried with joy. And as others were busy looting the Ba'ath Party office, I clenched my fist at Saddam's picture for stealing so many years of my life. I told my story to the first Marine I met, and together we recited the anthem of victory and eternal loyalty. And when my fellow countrymen dubbed me an agent, I felt no shame. "You don't understand," I shouted in their faces. At home, I hang George W. Bush's picture next to those of our religious leaders. In the elections, I was the first to vote. I flashed my purple finger in front of those who said they would kill me if I did. Your Honor, I always loved my neighbors. But when one of them, a so-called pious man, stared at me with a dagger behind his back, I left my neighborhood. In my new house that night, men in black knocked on my door. The imam wants to see you, they said. When I ran to the nearest American checkpoint, the soldiers told me it was none of their business. They cut my city in two with ugly blast walls and said, "Live in peace." When I protested on Freedom Square, they beat me and said I was a threat to national security. Last week, I decided to leave Iraq, but they arrested me on the border. They said I had a fake ID. I didn't want to be called Ali or Umar, Shiite or Sunni. All I wanted was to be an Iraqi. In that game of survival, we kept changing our names till we forgot who we were. They said they would let me go if I paid them, but I refused, and they beat me. I insisted on seeing you because I believe in your justice. Yesterday on my trip to the border, I ran through the dark, the shadows of our dilapidated and rebellious cities. Cities lit by car bombs and fires. I waved goodbye to the last American troops, to weapons laid to cautious rest. The soldiers never waved back, and under the black rain, together we walked to the end. I shouted, "Long live Iraq!"
Israel Rubai is an Iraqi who has worked as a reporter and translator in NPR's Baghdad bureau. This was her dramatization of how life changed during the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
Thanks to the generosity of listeners, 2011 has been another year filled with headline-making news from around the world and inspiring musical performances. With your help, we pledge to continue that tradition in 2012. As the month ends, please make a tax-deductible gift to support WILL at willpledge.org. You'll hear your investment every time you listen. And thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 29th of December, 2011. The first YMCA in America opened in Boston on this day in 1851 to serve young men from the country who'd come to the city to work and to keep them out of taverns and brothels by offering social support and being a good influence, offering low-cost housing, too, and there was a free lending library. The YMCA is still very strong in Boston, the largest provider of child care, the largest summer employer of young people, and it provides millions of dollars worth of services.